Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Health Technology Podcast. My name is Christine Minotto, and I'm the director of the Rosamond Institute at University of California, San Francisco. Today, we're talking to Evan Luxon, founder and CEO of Santis. Santis is developing an intelligent system to automatically clear blood and fluid from chest tubes. Current standard care practice for patients after having heart or lung surgery is that nurses drain the chest cavity by clearing the chest tube manually, which is very labor-intensive. With their system, nurses don't need to do this anymore. Santis is currently in transition from the R&D stage to commercial with this product. Evan is also a star. He was named the 2017 Entrepreneur of the Year by Pipeline, the Midwest-based entrepreneurship program. Let's hear from Evan. Hi, everyone. This is Christine Minotto at the Rosamond Institute. And today we have Evan Luxon, who is the founder and CEO of Santis, joining us for a conversation with me. And so welcome.
Thank you.
So I thought it would be good for us to start if you can share with us and the listener here is like what, you know, what's your background? How do you end up in the medical devices? We all, you know, came from different directions.
Sure.
And somehow we landed in this place.
Sounds good. Yeah. So my background is in engineering. And back when I was first studying engineering, I thought I wanted to go into aerospace engineering. But I also had sort of a little bit of the entrepreneurial bug even back then. And so I knew I wanted to be a part of something new and exciting. And I realized that in aerospace engineering, unless you're Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, it's tough to have an aerospace company. And at the same time, I was getting involved in medical products through my undergrad. So I started working on medical projects and fell in love with that, seeing the impact that it had on patients and the ability to do it with a small team. And so I kind of shifted my focus and then focused the rest of my schooling on medical device development. So I
went. And this is when you were in Johns Hopkins.
Exactly. So then I went to Johns Hopkins and studied through their bioengineering, innovation, and design program. I got a master's there and then made my way out to Stanford for mechanical engineering. Again, very embedded in the medical device community here. So.
And that's your second master or that's your PhD?
No, that was a second master's. Yeah. So I was a professional student for a while. Part of it was the program at Johns Hopkins was very good, but it wasn't very technical. And there were still a lot of technical things I wanted to learn. And I was fortunate enough to have funding from the National Science Foundation to continue my schooling. So I looked at Stanford, I loved the program, and I felt like being out near Silicon Valley would be a great way to really embed myself in the medical device startup community.
And so after Stanford, you mentioned that you also do some work with other startups. And tell us about that.
Sure. So once I got to Stanford, I looked for opportunities to get involved in medical device development, not just in the classroom, but outside of it. And so there were a couple companies in the biodesign program that I got involved with early on, a company called Clear Ear that was doing work in audiology, and then a company called Ocular Dynamics or Tangible Science. They were doing work on a new contact lens for people with dry eye. And so I got to work with them very early on, and that was when I really knew that being in early medical device companies was where I wanted to spend my career.
And so how do you end up with creating Santis? What was the inspiration?
So after Stanford, I ended up going to work at Theranova, a medical device incubator in San Francisco. And through that experience, worked on a handful of different projects, mostly in an engineering role, but also a little bit of a project management. And before Santis, I had led the product development for another company that was related to drainage in urology. And we developed the technology to get real-time urine output in the ICU and realized in speaking with customers, looking at just other opportunities, we could apply our technology to chest drains. And so it kind of started from there. But then once we really started looking at it further, we realized there was a big opportunity. And so that's what led to Santis.
So leading to that, I mean, many of the people here probably don't know what Santis product is. Can you tell us what it is?
Yes, absolutely. So at Santis, we're developing an automated surgical drainage system for post-operative drainage following cardiothoracic surgery. basically what we're trying to do is make sure that when patients leave the OR after cardiac or a lung surgery, there's no buildup of fluid in the heart or around the heart or around the lungs, because that can lead to a lot of complications. So our device is a digital system that takes care of all the drainage. It makes sure that the patients are recovering as they should. Basically, it automates a lot of the work that the nurses have to do right now. And unfortunately, there's a lot of variability in how they do it. So that's what we're doing.
How do they do it right now?
So right now, a lot of nurses we talk to explain that chest tubes are sort of the bane of their existence. For the first few hours after surgery, a lot of times they're constantly manipulating the lines. So they have these terms like milking, they say, or stripping the lines. They're basically sort of kneading them to try and clear any clots. But it's very labor intensive. It doesn't really work that well. And so they're some of our most excited stakeholders because they see our device and they think, I don't have to do that anymore. That'd be great.
It's nice that you have a product for the nurses.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We've been, our take on it is that the nurses, once they see our device and how much easier it makes work for them, that they'll be the ones that really become the main champions for us in the hospital and keep it in the hospitals where it's used.
Yeah, we all know the nurses tend to be overworked.
Right.
And there's a lot of demand for them to do more work. So mm-hmm. anything that helped them, I think that would be great.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you start Centese, you mentioned that you got some grant money. Mm-hmm. You're pretty scrappy to get things where you're
right.
very resourceful. Tell mm-hmm. us how you go about it.
Yeah, definitely. I think you have to be resourceful, you know, doing early stage medical device development. For us, we looked for new ways interesting ways to try and get funding early on so that we could make some early progress. One way we did that was actually by relocating the company or starting the company in Nebraska, which is where I'm from. There were some early grants that we were able to get from the state of Nebraska to do really early work, show the feasibility of the device, and then leverage that to go out and raise more money. But yeah, you have to be scrappy. You have to look for creative ways to make progress on not a lot of money, that's for sure.
What would you recommend for somebody who doesn't have a family connection in Nebraska?
Sure.
And they all grow up here. They don't want to leave
yeah.
Nebraska. Well, what should they do?
I'd say give Nebraska a chance. No, I don't know. I mean, I think you still have to, I think non-dilutive funding, there's a lot of ways to get non-dilutive funding. We also, you know, have grants from NSF, SBIR grants. I think most people doing early stage medical device development know about the SBIR programs, but there are lots of other ways to do non-dilutive funding. There's foundations oftentimes. If you can find a clinical need where there's enough passion around it to have a foundation, finding very focused early angels who maybe have a personal connection to what you're working on so that they're willing to take that risk. Those are just a couple of the ways that you can do it. But you have to make that early progress. I mean, there's really no way anymore, I don't think, to raise money without having shown the feasibility. You can't just have an idea.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to this, another entrepreneur who found their investors by looking up on Google.
Okay.
And so they make the connection. You know, you're saying like getting family foundation.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about that?
Actually finding the investors?
Yeah. How did you find your investors?
I mean, some of it was Google, right? Just, you know, looking out and seeing who we could find. When we were going out after the point where we had our grant money from NSF, because those are decent sized grants that we can make a lot of progress on, we were very focused on finding investors who understood medical device development. We were very focused on Midwest based investors because they like to invest in the region. So a lot of it was starting with just Google and seeing who else is out there, but then looking, looking at our networks, once we knew one, asking them for introductions, looking at trade associations, and then attending events too. I mean, there's been a few Midwest-based events where a lot of investors will gather. And so trying to be at those events and, you know, meet as many people as you can, I think is important.
And these are the Midwestern investors investing in Midwestern company, or do you think the Californian company should just flock Nebraska?
I don't think they're opposed to investing in the coasts. That's for sure. I think that there is something about investing in the region, partly because I think the Midwest has a little bit of a chip on its shoulder as far as startups go, that it's not taken as seriously or overlooked potentially by some of the coastal investors. So for that reason, I actually think that a lot of the investors in the Midwest have opportunities to invest in things that maybe the coasts just don't really look at. So, but that said, yeah, I mean, they're investors. They're looking to make a return. They're all interested in, a lot of them are medical device investors. So yeah, if you've got something that fits their portfolio, then even if you're in California, it's probably worth a shot.
Yeah. Okay. It's always sometimes go outside your comfort zone.
Yeah.
It's always good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sorry to digress on that side, but you know, can you tell us like where Centees is right now, what stage you are at?
Sure. Yeah. We are at a very exciting point of the company where we're transitioning from the development of the device, where we've built it, designed it, and basically finished the development of the device, are going through verification now and getting to the point where we'll be starting our clinical study and submitting to FDA very soon to have clearance and be on the market. So we're in the transition phase from being an R&D company to being a commercial company later this year.
That's
so
exciting.
Yeah, yeah, very exciting.
So how many sites have you done your product?
Actually, use the device.
Use the device, right?
Well, we haven't done any clinical work yet. We're working on a clinical study with Stanford, so they're going to be our first in-human experience pilot study, and then we've got another site, NYU, lined up to do a follow-on study. But all the work we've done so far has either been on the bench or in animals. We've done a decent number of animal studies that have shown our device works. And one nice thing about the classification of our device is we don't actually need that clinical data for 510K clearance. Mm-hmm. It's more to have the data when we go, you know, to a hospital and want to show them that it's worth their time and money to buy it.
Yeah. And how big, can you share with us, like how big this potential market for Centees?
Oh yeah, for sure. So Centees, because we're addressing drainage, there are a lot of different applications for drainage outside the scope of cardiothoracic. We're very focused on that now, because the need is particularly present there. Anytime there's blood, it tends to clot, and that causes issues for drains. That market alone in the U.S. and Europe is about $1 billion. Trauma would be the next market we would expand into, and that doubles it to about $2 billion. And then from there, there's a whole bunch of other applications like neurology or plastic surgery where we could expand once we've got that initial beachhead.
So I heard recently that you won the Entrepreneurship Award.
Yes. So when I moved back to Nebraska, one of the things that I wanted to do was find other entrepreneurs that I could connect with, because you know there's a great entrepreneurial community there, but the density per capita is not as great as it is out here. And so I found this organization called Pipeline, which is a Midwest-based entrepreneurship program. And I was accepted into that program. And over the past year, me and the rest of my fellows who were accepted, we participated in modules where we traveled around the Midwest. And every 4 months or so, we had national and sometimes even international mentors come in and coach us on customer development and financial modeling, everything that goes into building a company. And then it all culminated at the end of the year with a big presentation to a panel of judges. And so it was a great experience. I was fortunate enough to be named the Innovator of the Year at the end of it. But the main benefit was definitely just going through that experience itself.
Well, that's good. This podcast is sponsored by IO Life Science, a Silicon Valley-based medtech design and development consultancy, transforming your technologies into unique healthcare solutions. For more information, you can visit their website at www.iolifescience.com.
They have a device for regenerating bone in postmenopausal osteoporotic women. Mm-hmm. And I took that device pretty far.
Medics?
Mimetics. Yep, exactly. Yeah. So I wrote the first grant application to get that one going. Uh-huh. Respirix, the cardio heart failure device. Dan and I got that one going. Okay. That one was one that we discovered as part of the Potrero project. Mm. We came across the signal in the breath at an animal study.
Okay.
And then decided to start a company to look at cardiac applications. So it's been a bunch of different, and then some of the more R&D ones, there's a diabetes one, but yeah, they're doing long-term glucose, implanted glucose sensing in the perineal cavity.
Okay.
So I did a lot of the early work on that device. And then Centese was the latest one.
Okay.
So.
That's good. So what brought you to move to Nebraska?
It was a mix of things. I mean, I think that the initial impetus for it was a personal connection. I mean, I'm from there, and I have always seen myself as being there longer term.
Okay.
So when we were starting the company, you know, we didn't have any funding. We were trying to figure out ways to be creative to get some progress done. And they had these grants that we were able to use. So the very first grant we got was actually from the state of Nebraska.
I see.
And then they were able to actually match both of our NSF grants.
Okay.
So they have some really good incentive programs.
Okay.
So that's what got me there. And then once we got there, it ended up being a pretty good place to be. We found the right people. It's a lot less expensive to operate the company from there than it is here.
It's expensive? Less expensive.
Less expensive. Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Uh-huh. So it was a number of reasons, but yeah.
Okay. And anything interesting and fun about your life?
Just general stuff, huh? I'm definitely an engineer at heart, you know, and so even outside of medical devices, I like to work with my hands and build things and make things. And so do a lot of like coffee roasting at home, brewing beer. And then probably the most interesting thing is my wife and I, we actually bought a hunting lodge that was built in the 30s that we're in the process of renovating as our...
Oh, wow. Maybe you should invite us.
Home. Yeah, well, and once it's done, yeah. Right now it's a little scary.